Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by Core Sports, the best in women's activewear, the Challenged Athletes Foundation, our 21st annual event coming up on October 19th at La Jolla Cove, and the California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands coming up in San Diego on Sunday, February 15th. That's cal1020.com. Our next guest, four-time Olympian, the first woman to qualify for the Olympics in three different sports, the amazing Sheila Tormina. Sheila, it's been far too long. How are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. Thanks.
Yeah, well, Sheila, first of all, congratulations on everything you're doing. Is it your third book that that just came out?
Yes, my third book with Fellow Press.
Good for you. And the first book was, I remember talking to the Velo Press guys, and they were amazed at the sales numbers were great.
Yeah, I was really happy to hear that. I think the book is selling well in large part because of how much great work they do at Velo. And I think there was a need for the book, too. I had a real desire to write it. So that combination has worked out really well.
What was fascinating to me with your new book is you have photos in there which shows all four strokes, but it looks like the same stroke. When you look at photos, you go like, wait a second, I don't see any difference here. When you started working on this, were you surprised when you started breaking down the photos into just different parts of the pole?
I was really surprised. I knew that the vital elements of the stroke, like how we get the catch, you know, which is the first moment in the stroke that we position our arms in such a way that we can move forward from that position. I knew that the catch was present in all strokes. I just didn't know exactly how identical it would look. And then what surprised me even more was after we make the catch and then we navigate to sort of the middle phase of our pole, you know, the part of the pole that takes place sort of under the body.
Yeah.
I was really surprised at how the position of the upper arm and the lower arm and everything was identical. So I had a lot of fun as I was working on the book.
Well, so the first book, Swim Speed Secrets, was all freestyle, correct? The whole idea was get people faster on freestyle.
Yes.
And all about, really, underwater, what's happening underwater. Because I've watched so many different swimmers over time. And when you look above water, people are so different. But really, your propulsion, it's all underwater.
You got it.
So you did Swim Speed Secrets, then Swim Speed Workouts. And then when you moved in this Swim Speed Strokes, did you feel that, like with triathletes, I know as a triathlon guy, I go to the pool and go, hey, listen, in a race, I'm just swimming freestyle. I don't need backstroke. I don't need butterfly. I don't need breaststroke. Did you find that a lot of athletes were like me and not really looking at the other strokes?
Yeah, definitely among the triathlon ranks. And I wanted to encourage triathletes to learn at least one other stroke, if not two or three other strokes. Just not just for the sake of making practice more interesting, but because I think when you understand the elements of one of those other strokes, it helps you with your primary stroke. And then also, I was interested, I didn't really write about this in the book, but neural fatigue, you know, if we just continually repeat the same motions, our neural system is gonna wear out a bit, and we become stale, you know, or worst-case scenario, we become overtrained and have a hard time recovering from that. So I thought switching it up would be good for triathletes from all different angles, from the mental angle to the physical and the neural angle, and plus, I wanted to write this book for swimmers as well, young swimmers all the way through to master swimmers, so we could learn from the best athletes in the world on how to do all these strokes really well.
And talking to somebody who knows a little bit about being flexible and trying new things, who more so than Sheila Tormina? So growing up, swimming, I'm imagining that it was all swimming all the time because you were heading towards a 1996 gold medal at the 200 relay. Did you swim all through high school, college? That was your sport.
I did. Yep. I was a swimmer growing
up. That was it. Yeah.
And that's what swimmers do. They just swim. They don't do a whole lot on land.
So when did you decide? You 96 Olympics, you get the gold medal, And when did you make the decision that, you know what, as an athlete, I'm not quite over yet, and what is this thing, triathlon? Because triathlon was going to be in the Olympics for the very first time in 2000. When did you decide that, you know what, I think I'd like to try this new sport?
When I gained about 10 or 12 pounds. You know, and that's not a lot, but I'm only 5'2.5", and so it just felt bad after having been an athlete, a swimmer, for so many years. So I finished my swimming in 1996. I really did nothing, physically nothing. I was working full-time in the automotive industry. But I didn't exercise for about 2 years. And so it was 1998 that, you know, just like a lot of people, I heard about a local triathlon, and I wanted to do it to just become physically fit again. And I thought, well, heck, I can swim, and, you know, anybody pretty much can ride a bike. I don't know if I'll be fast, but I can ride a bike. And then if I have to walk on the run, I'll walk. And so that's why I took up triathlon. It wasn't that I had any aspirations to make another Olympic team.
I mean, did you surprise yourself by making the Olympic team that first time as a triathlete?
Well, by the time the Olympic trials came around, I knew I had a good shot, so I wasn't surprised. But it was, you know, right after that first local triathlon that I did in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that a gentleman named Lou Kidder approached me, and he was the one who saw that I had possibly had the potential because of my swimming background. He said, if I can teach you the bike and the run, I think you have a shot at this Olympic team, because Olympic racing is draft legal, so
right,
you need the strong swim. And so at first I kind of laughed him off, and I really didn't want to do sports, but he convinced me just to join the group and have fun, and I wanted to stay in shape, so I did join them. And probably about 8 or 9 or 10 months into it, that's when I started to see, why couldn't I race these girls in triathlon? It was a fast road to learning, but I knew I had a shot once I learned what the sport was about and what the keys to success were.
What's interesting is really what you're saying in 1997, you're basically learning this new sport, and then 3 years later, you're in Sydney at the first ever Olympic triathlon.
No, 1997, I was driving a camper around the country eating Taco Bell and McDonald's, gaining that 10 to 12 pounds.
So really, at that point, you weren't even...
It was not until summer of
98.
My first triathlon of my life was July of 98.
So you made it to the Olympic team in basically 2 years.
Yeah.
And you got sixth at Sydney?
Yep.
So your first Olympic triathlon experience, you get sixth place. And that the difference in the Olympic experience for you, 96, you're part of a relay team, you're in Atlanta. Now you're in Sydney, Australia, really one of the most beautiful cities in the world. The triathlon is the first event of the games. It's going to be the travelogue, basically, to showcase the rest of the Olympics. What was that experience like?
Sydney did, and the Australians did a phenomenal job. I mean, to have it be, the venue was at the Opera House.
Yep.
We swam in the Sydney Harbor, and then we biked around downtown and through the botanical gardens. And like you said, it was day one. They wanted to showcase the city to everybody around the world. And the USA team, I have to say, Joanna Zeiger and Jennifer Gutierrez were the females on that team.
Yep.
And it felt just as much of a team as I did when I was on the Olympic swimming team. We were so close and bonded and came up with our strategies. I mean, it's hard to beat having an Olympics in your own country like I did in Atlanta in 1996. But I'll tell you, that Sydney Games maybe was my favorite because of our coaching staff and teammates.
Yeah.
And the Australians and how they put on that game. It's just phenomenal.
Well, and look at you guys. Joanna took fourth and you got sixth. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, we had a good showing because Australia is so powerful. And then the Swiss women, Brigitte McMahon and Nagelai Messner, you know, they did a phenomenal job. And that's, as an athlete, I've always said, you know, I want to win. Who doesn't want to win? But the spirit of the games is to go do your best and to appreciate that those women who did win, they wanted it as badly as I did. And I've had my share of blessings. And it was just fun all around for all of us to be out there. And the weather couldn't have been better. So it was a incredible day, and I had 22 people in my family flew over there. So,
what
really
an experience!
Special memories,
right? And then you move on, and it's the Olympics in Athens in 2004. Athens certainly isn't Australia, but it's still the Olympic experience, right?
It is, and what made that so special is, of course, Athens was the site of the first games of the modern era in 1896, and I had heard that, you know, they bid on it for 1996 and didn't get it, but for them to then, you know, be able to get it 8 years later, it was really special being there in Greece, and once again, another beautiful country, wonderful people. The triathlon venue, unfortunately, was it was about an hour drive south of where the center of activity was, so we were a little bit out there, but it still was a beautiful venue, and you just weren't in the middle of the games there.
What I love, Sheila, is if you look at your history with these events, when you're talking equipment wise, swimming is goggles and a suit, right?
Yes.
Triathlon, you start adding. You got the bike, you got the bike shoes, you got helmet, you got all that stuff. And so here after triathlon, it's like, well, what other sport can I find where I need even more equipment than triathlon? How about if I need a horse, I need a sword, I need a gun, I think I'll try modern pentathlon. It's like most people try to uncomplicate their life. And I look at Sheila Turby and I'm like, she's like adding things all the time. Let's see, I need more. I need, my house is a little empty. Where can I put the horse? Where can I put the sword? I need a couple guns around here. What led you to modern pentathlon? Because you became, you know, good enough to make the Olympic team for 2008 in a sport that I'm sure not a lot of people grow up doing all five of these things.
No, yeah, I had never shot a gun and never bet on a horse, and I tell people I didn't know what a fencing uniform looked like, but I didn't seek it out, and just like the triathlon, I was just sort of going about my day, and I came in contact with a human being who put an idea in my head. You know, so just like Lou Kidder had said, I think you have potential in triathlon. I was at the Olympic Training Center training for triathlon,
yeah,
when the pentathlon group approached me and said they'd like to recruit people who can swim and run. And they were the ones to say, do you know, we don't believe anybody's ever made the Olympics in a third sport before. You seem to have the skill set where we could teach you the three skill sports, the shooting, fencing, riding. Would you be interested? And I, you know, at first I said, no, I'm really, they wanted me to switch. This was in 2002, and they wanted me to switch to try and make the 2014. I said, no, I'm very committed to triathlon, and I'll retire after that. And I sort of put it in my back pocket, like the thought.
Sure.
I said, wow, that's interesting. No one's made it in three sports. But once I saw through my triathlon career in 2004, I didn't do anything right off the bat, but I kind of waited about 3 months to see if I still had energy, and that idea intrigued me, the chance to make Olympic history and go to the Olympics in a third sport. So it seemed to be something that the doors opened, and I look back on it and I say, just what you said, that was a little bit crazy to add on, you know, to the duties of the day by taking on so many sports. But I did it. I almost wish I had picked some single sport.
Yes.
It would have been a lot more sane. But I didn't. I took up and tap on, and I'm glad I did. I gained an appreciation for the skill sports like shooting and fencing and riding. We think, you know, oh, how those can't be that hard. They're so incredibly difficult. I'm really glad I did it.
Well,
but
so
I'm tired. I'm still tired,
you're
Bob.
Still tired from training from all that stuff.
Yeah.
You had to basically learn all of that. So five events, one day, right? Is it all in one day? So fencing, what was the toughest part of all this? Because you're, like you said, you're learning to ride a horse, you're learning to fence, and you're learning to shoot a gun. I mean, those are three of the five things you have to have.
Yeah, and they're all equally difficult. You know, shooting, the challenge is staying calm under competition pressure, especially triathletes are, you know, we're mostly all Type A people.
Yep.
So coming down and being that Type B person is not so easy. But I worked with a sports psychologist on that. And then you know, the fencing, it's not muscle memory. What we do in triathlon, swim, bike, run, that's very much muscle memory. We're repeating the same motion cycle after cycle, whether it's a swim stroke cycle or a run stride or a pedal stroke cycle. And fencing, any move that you make, you have an opponent that's trying to thwart your move. So it's a game of trickery and deceit and reaction, and that wasn't in my natural set of skills as an athlete. So I think I struggled the most with fencing. And then riding the horse, we in pentathlon, we simulate the skills that a 19th century cavalry soldier would need during wartime, the skills that they would need to fight the enemy or escape the enemy. This is where the origins of the sport come from. And that 19th century cavalry soldier may have to grab any horse off the battlefield to ride it. So in pentathlon, we never ride our own horse. We draw a number out of a hat, get a horse we've never been on, and we get 20 minutes to warm up.
Oh, my God.
And then we're jumping a four-foot course with this horse. So that the challenge comes in, you know, getting to become very good friends with this animal in 20 minutes and then going out there. To me, that became my favorite sport of all time because I'm an animal lover and I loved the beauty and the power of the horse. But it wasn't easy. That first 2 years of learning that was filled with many falls and being very scared and trying to understand the sport. But
you did great because you finished 19th in the modern pentathlon 2008, and you were first in swimming and you were first in what, equestrian show jumping?
Yeah, I was. I was first in those two, and unfortunately, not only was I dead last in the fencing, but second to dead last was so far ahead of me. But you know, there's a great lesson in that in sport is just being able to accept those tough days because life is like that. And I had a sister at those games who really, in the middle of the fencing, she said, you know, it's not the spirit of an athlete to want to win. It's the spirit of an athlete to go fight and do the best you can. And it was a really interesting message to be at my very last day of competition of my life and understand that it's not always about winning. It's about the road and the fight. And, so it was hard to swallow, but sometimes we have to be able to walk off that field of competition and be thankful that we were even there in the first place. And that's definitely what I felt in Beijing.
Well, you think about how many people have wanted to get on an Olympic team in modern pentathlon and have been doing it, had grown up as horse people and hunters and never made an Olympic team. And you made an Olympic team and finished 19th in a sport that you probably couldn't spell pentathlon a few years earlier.
So, when they did approach me, I didn't know what sports were in it.
You know, I know. I'm like, wait a second, you fence and you two. Okay. So in that, is it in order? Do you go, you fence first and then 200 free and then show jumping? And then you follow that with the combined pistol shooting and 3200 run?
Well, the sports evolved. So now what you're saying, yes. That's the order that they had starting in London 2012.
Yeah.
But I did it in Beijing 2008, and we didn't combine the shooting and the running.
Oh, they were separate.
So, right, yeah, that was the last games where all five events were completely separate. So shooting was first, and then fencing, swimming, riding, and then we ended with the run.
I like that. Now, that probably would be, well, I don't know, is it better for you separate than running and trying to, I remember doing a running, what they call it, a biathlon, where you ran and then you shot a rifle, and man, I couldn't, my heart rate was all over the place, and so was that rifle. Did you do one of those, or you didn't have to do that format?
We didn't, and it's hard to say if I would have liked that format better, the combined shoot run. I think I would have because there is nothing worse than waking up that morning and shooting as your first event. And, you know, I drink coffee in the morning, and it was just so hard. And I have never felt anxiety come from the back of my neck and just rush over the back of my skull and then across the top of my head and then roll like right onto the front of my forehead and plant itself there and you're holding that gun on target and it was crazy. I felt so nervous trying to be calm and I almost wish I would have rather dealt with what you described, you know, the high heart rate from being physically exhausted rather than the nerves because I was 39 years old at those Olympic Games and I joke with people that I was this middle-aged woman who, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to pay my next month's mortgage, and so I already had my anxieties going on, and didn't make it any easier, but my teammate was 16 years old at those games, and she would just chew on gum, and, you know, she'd shoot a center 10 every time.
I love that. I love that.
She had no worries, but it was a wonderful challenge, and
So Sheila, when you look at, you obviously, you speak all over the world, and you talk to swimmers and people who want to be swimmers. What's some of the bigger mistakes people make when it comes to swimming?
Well, the reason I write my books, and I don't know that this is a mistake. It's not a mistake they're making, but I think we have to be very careful in the triathlon and the swimming community.
Yeah.
We talk so much about efficiency and reducing resistance, and we're implying that little work needs to be done, that if you just learn how to glide through the water, you'll be magically fast. And I know swimming to be different than that. We have to understand how we hold water and generate propulsion, and it is very physically challenging. So even if you look at the synonyms for the word efficiency in the thesaurus, the synonyms are drilled, practiced, business-like, high-powered. So, to become efficient, we need to do a lot of work. And this is why I write my books. I want people to know what goes on underwater.
Yeah.
Because Olympic swimmers make it look effortless, of course, but they've put in so much time to developing that stroke, and they're conditioned and both in their heart and also in their muscle tone. So I think it can be very fun to develop that skill. And that's why I write my books, to say, look at the beauty of what goes on under here and how athletic we can become. Because as triathletes, no one's afraid to put out the watts on the bike.
No.
And people know what pace they need to hit on the run, and they know they got to work to do that. So it's kind of been interesting to me to see that in swimming, we almost are giving it a different reputation. Like, well, this one, you could just, not have to work. If you we'll teach you how to not put in much work, but be fast. I'm pretty sure you got to work.
You got to work. Now, do you think some of that comes from, especially in triathlon, where, okay, you get to wear a wetsuit at the beginning of the race, so, you don't really have to train that much in the pool because, the wetsuit will help give you flotation.
Well, the wetsuit does make you faster, but, people always thought, well, you're a swimmer, so when you put on a wetsuit, or when you're in a wetsuit race, you don't get as big of an advantage, right? And I said, well, yeah, I do. I get the same advantage in a wetsuit because swimming's all about positioning the hand and arm and the feet, if you're a kicker,
yeah,
on how to hold water. So it's even harder in a wetsuit for anybody, whether you're a swimmer or non-swimmer, to go into those positions because the neoprene, just is around your arm, and you already have to be strong to manipulate the upper arm and lower arm in very unique ways. But I do think that wetsuit has been part of the reason why we think, you
don't have to.
You can get away with it.
Yeah. Love that. So, Gwen, I was going to mention Gwen Jorgensen. It's been 10 years since you won the world championships for the U.S. in triathlon. And over the weekend, Gwen Jorgensen came, really, she's been in the sport for 4 years, coming out of with a swimming background and a running background, becoming a triathlete and winning the world championships. When you saw that she won, did that bring back some memories to your world championship, ITU world championship in 2004?
Yeah, it did. It was great to see her win. And I was just in Nashville, Tennessee 2 days ago doing clinics, and Kathleen Johnson, who's one of our top coaches of our junior athletes and on the ITU circuit, she was giving me a kind of a rundown of how the race panned out. And I was just so happy for Gwen, even though I don't know Gwen. But what a phenomenal athlete, and she's been consistent. So it's not like a one-off that she won this.
Five WTS races in a row.
Yeah, that's the consistency. It reminds me of like Siri Lindley, when Siri was just on a roll. And once again, there's another phenomenal athlete and human being in this planet. So
in this, the three books, Swim Speed Secrets, Swim Speed Workouts, and Swim Speed Strokes. Swim Speed Strokes just came out recently, correct?
It did, about 3 weeks ago.
Okay. And people can get that pretty much Amazon.com. Where do you suggest?
Yeah, you got it. Velo Press has all the places you can get it, but Amazon.com, and I know Barnes & Noble carries it, and I think internationally there's also, it's been translated already into Spanish and into German.
Wow.
So overseas, if anybody listens to your radio overseas.
We do.
Yeah.
We have a lot overseas, actually.
I'm not sure if those are off the press yet, but they're coming off the press if they haven't already.
So, Sheila, are you spending most of your time traveling around the world doing clinics?
I am. I leave for Asia on September 14th, and I'll be there for a month, and then all over the U.S. It's been really fun.
Good for you. Now, you ever get out here on the West Coast? Let us know when you get here on the West Coast so we can. It'd be fun to set up a Q&A with the Tri Club of San Diego. Those are always a ton of fun.
I would love to. You know, I escaped Detroit in the winter, so I might find my might be down there. I actually rode my motorcycle across the San Diego border into Tijuana last year at this time, and rode a motorcycle down to Cabo and stayed there for a couple of months.
No way! So you ride a Harley? What do you ride?
No, I'm a little bit of a wimp. I have a Honda Rebel 250. I don't like the big ones. I go slow, but it made it the whole way down.
All the way to Cabo.
Well, we were doing the photo shoot for Swim Speed Strokes.
Yeah.
Bello Press. I said, I want to get the best in the world. And I think if we have the photo shoot in Cabo San Lucas, I might be able to entice them to get down there. So we had 6 world record holders and Olympic gold medalists down there. And I said, well, my dream has been to ride down the Baja Peninsula. So one of the people from the publishing company drove my Land Rover and had a trailer in case my little Honda Rebel broke down. I didn't fully trust her. It was an epic trip and wonderful, and we ended down there with a great photo shoot, and then I stayed for a couple of months to write the manuscript for the book.
In Cabo?
In Cabo, yeah. Well, just north of Cabo. I go to a sleepy little fishing village about 60 miles north.
I love that. Good for you.
Life is, you can make whatever you want. It's an open slate, right?
Hey, listen, and when you start saying, hey, we're doing the photo shoot in Cabo, all of a sudden you get a little bigger name athlete coming down.
Yeah, and they were really nice about it before then. I think they would have done it anyways, but that didn't hurt, that's for sure.
I love that. Hey, Sheila, congratulations on everything you're doing. Hey, if people want to find out more about your clinics and things like that, did they just go to your website?
Yeah, anybody could contact me if they're interested through SheilaT.com, and I respond to them and try and do it in a timely manner. And, I love to get all over the place. So
I love it. Sheila, thank you so much for taking time. Again, the book is Swim Speed Strokes and is available Velo Press, Amazon.com, pretty much anywhere. The woman who has been in 4 Olympics in 3 different sports, Sheila Tormina, has been our guest. Sheila, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
And again, my name is Bob Babbitt. This is Babbittville Radio. You can check out all of our interviews on iTunes. We're brought to you by Core Sports, the best in women's activewear, the Challenge Athletes Foundation, and California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, cal1020.com. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.